Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 376 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. This is going to be a short podcast, but I'm going to call it the Clutch Thyroid Cancer Podcast. Right, so thyroid cancer is something we know that's tested very commonly on the USMLE exams. So it's something I want you to be able to get correct, get right when you see on a test. So let's just go ahead and get started. Again, as for those of you that are going to be taking your USMLE Step 2 exams, or step 3 or complex level 2 or 3 exams within the next 7 weeks, roughly. I do have an MBME test taking strategies course coming up on the 21st of March from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So that's like 5 to 7:30 Eastern. And then I also have a 24-hour comprehensive review course taking place from the 22nd to the 25th of March from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time each day. That's basically from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, for those of you that are taking your USMLE Step 2 CK or Step 3, again, or Complex Level 2 or 3 exams in the summer, I have a 75-hour Step 2 CK school. I call it the DISC school. It's going to be taking place from May the 2nd to the 13th. We're going to be meeting for 7.5 hours each day. I literally made a personalized podcast on that. It's going to be capped, the 75-hour school, at 40 people, because again, I want to invest deeply in everyone that is attending. So if you're interested in any of these things, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information. Okay, so let's begin. Right, so we know that thyroid cancer obviously is cancer from the thyroid, right? That's kind of like the big thing. And many times, the thing that tells us that a person has thyroid cancer is that you can palpate a nodule on the neck, right? You can palpate a nodule on the neck. You're like, whoa, what is going on here, right? Now, the thing is, the workup of thyroid nodules is kind of a smart thing to know about for exams, right? We know that when a person has a thyroid nodule, they're like, ooh. Well, the very first thing you're going to do is to measure the TSH. That's always what you do first. Because when you measure the TSH, it will help you differentiate if it's a hot nodule or a cold nodule, right? So if the TSH is low, that means there must be a lot of thyroid hormone around that's suppressing that TSH, right? In that case, that was what we called a hot nodule. Many times, you're going to follow that up by doing a radioactive iodine uptake scan, right? Or a RIO scan. Sometimes they call that a thyroid scintigraphy. And, you know, you may see a single focus of increased uptake, which will be a toxic adenoma, or multiple foci of increased uptake, that'll be a toxic multinodular goiter, or you see like the whole thyroid diffusely increased uptake, right? You're thinking of things along the lines of like Graves' disease, where you have those thyroid stimulating immunoglobulins. And then if you see no uptake and the person has a super tender thyroid gland, right, you're probably thinking of De Quervain's thyroiditis. Again, remember, De Quervain's thyroiditis has many alternate names. They can call it subacute thyroiditis. They can call it granulomatous thyroiditis on exams, right? But many times, nodules that are hot, right, they don't have malignant potential. Again, yes, there are some hot nodules that are malignant. But most times when a person has a hot nodule, we're not really worried about cancer there. But when a nodule is cold, and how do you say that a nodule is cold? You define a nodule as being cold by the fact that when you measure the TSH, right, is normal or increased, then you're like, whoa, that is not good, right? Like a nodule that, you know, when a person has a thyroid nodule and a person is like euthyroid, so their TSH is normal or their TSH is high, that's worrisome, right? That's where we worry about cancer. Although, to be honest with you, most times when people have thyroid nodules, it's completely benign. But those cold nodules, we often want to biopsy them so that we can figure out if we're dealing with cancer or not, right? Now, one smart high-yield thing to keep at the back of your mind is that these cold nodules, after we've done the TSH, the next step on exams is to do an ultrasound. You always want to do an ultrasound. It will just give you better visualization of the nodule, right? And then many times, while you're doing the ultrasound, you can do a fine needle aspiration of said nodule. That's many times done by interventional radiology or just regular diagnostic radiology, and they'll figure out exactly what's going on and send it off to pathology for analysis, right? Now, the thing is, if a person is discovered to have any of these thyroid cancers, what are you going to do? Well, again, many times you're going to do some kind of surgical resection. You're going to do resection. But one thing that is floridly high yield to keep at the back of your mind is that after you perform surgical resection, right, the key thing you want to think about is that you want to give that person I-131 therapy, especially if they have papillary and follicular thyroid cancer. We'll talk about that in a bit, right? You want to give them I-131 therapy so that you can completely suppress any metastasis or anything like that. It's actually very high yield to know that. You want to be able to suppress every single thing, right? So you give I-131 therapy after surgery, right? I-131 therapy. So if there's any because remember, iodine concentrates in thyroid cells. So if you have thyroid cells in any part of the body, even if it's not in the neck, it's going to concentrate that radioactive iodine and it's going to kill off the cancer cell. Okay, right? So certain questions they love to test on exams, right? They can say, oh, what is the biggest risk factor for thyroid cancer? Well, I would hope you're saying, oh, Divine, the biggest risk factor for thyroid cancer is when you have a past history of like neck radiation, right? So let's say a person has had like lymphoma in the past and they had to get radiation as kids or whatever. That increases their risk of thyroid cancer, right? Or you see the NBMEs, they start mentioning places in like Chernobyl or Fukushima, things like that in an NBME question. They're pretty much testing papillary thyroid cancer, right? Because remember, again, papillary thyroid cancer many times arises in people that have had neck or chest radiation of some sort, right? And one thing you want to, I guess maybe some key things you want to keep in mind, you know, thyroid cancer is really not, I mean, it's not, obviously it's not good to ever have a malignancy, and my heart goes out to people that have dealt with cancers in their families. But thyroid cancer has one of the best survival rates of any cancer, right? Like almost 100% of people that have thyroid cancer survive at 5 years, right? So let's just slowly walk through each kind of thyroid cancer. Well, the very first one you want to keep in mind, right? If they give you a question about a person that has a neck mass, right? Has a neck mass, and they tell you that, oh, they do a fine needle aspiration and they find malignant cells. What should you be thinking about? The thing is, the NBMEs, what they do these days, sometimes they'll write questions like this and they'll put answers that are all correct. Papillary, follicular, medullary, anaplastic, they'll put all these things. And then you're like wondering, come on, what do I pick? Well, let me tell you how to know what to pick. The way you know what to pick is by going with epidemiology, right? So the thing is, again, that's one of the reasons why I have this podcast on, oh, what is the most common cause of XYZ, right? The NBMEs, sometimes they do these things where they put many causes of the same thing, and then they won't give you any clues in the question. But then the right answer is going to be the thing that is the most common, right? If you see a question like this, pick papillary thyroid cancer. Papillary thyroid cancer is the most common kind of thyroid cancer. Many times, they also do this with hemophilia. They'll put hemophilia A and B as answers. Hemophilia A many times is the right answer. But again, notice I'm saying this is when they don't give you clues. So sometimes they can give you clues in a question that will make you pick hemophilia B instead of hemophilia A. Okay, but let's continue, right? So what's the deal with papillary thyroid cancer? Well, remember, papillary thyroid cancer, right? Again, it's the most common cancer, right? And usually it happens in women, right? It happens in women. And the key thing about papillary thyroid cancer is that it can spread, right? But many times it spreads. The thing is, the method of spread of most of these thyroid cancers is actually pretty high yield to know for exam. So most times papillary thyroid cancer spreads through lymph nodes, right? In fact, many times on physical exam, when people have thyroid cancer, if it has spread, you're going to see cervical lymphadenopathy, like cervical or pretracheal, or like prelaryngeal lymphadenopathy, right? Again, especially for people taking step one listening to this, right? The cervical nodes are the first point of contact for papillary thyroid cancer, right? I remember sometimes people that have thyroid cancer, it can mess up their voice, right? Because again, they have involvement of the recurrent laryngeal nerve. That's very high yield to know for exam. So that's something that you can mess up when you're doing any kind of a thyroid surgery. And remember also, if you're doing thyroid surgery, that's actually the most common cause of hypoparathyroidism, right? Because as you're doing that thyroid surgery, you devascularize the parathyroid glands, and that can cause the person's PTH to plummet, and that's going to cause hypocalcemia with an elevated phosphate, right? So again, papillary thyroid cancer, again, when you is pressed through lymph nodes, it does not spread hematogenously. That's high yield to know, right? So when a person has papillary thyroid cancer, you're going to do a lymph node dissection when you're trying to make the diagnosis, when you're, you know, trying to make the diagnosis if you suspect that there's metastasis. Although many times these days, you know, you can find mets by doing certain specialized forms of iodine scintigraphy. Those are nuclear medicine scans. But we're not going to go into the fine details of that. That's more for radiology boards. But when a person has papillary thyroid cancer, it spreads through lymph nodes. It does not spread through the bloodstream, right? The reason I'm saying that is, again, sometimes they can put certain things like, oh, thyroidectomy with lymph node dissection, thyroidectomy without lymph node dissection as an answer on NBMEs. You need to know the right one to pick. You're going to pick the one that says thyroidectomy with lymph node dissection. Now, remember that rule does not apply to follicular thyroid cancer, right? Follicular thyroid cancer spreads hematogenously. It does not spread through lymph nodes, right? So many times, if a person has follicular thyroid cancer, you're not going to be doing any kind of lymph node dissection in those people, right? Now, again, papillary thyroid cancer, again, most common kind of thyroid cancer. And again, if you take a biopsy of this mass, what are you going to see? Well, I hope you're saying, oh, divine, we're going to see laminated calcifications. Remember, sometimes they call these things laminated calcifications or lamellated, L-A-M-E-L-L-A-T-E-D, lamellated calcifications, right? Those are your sarcoma bodies, right? They're pretty classic, right? And remember, sarcoma bodies are not just found in papillary thyroid cancer. You can find them in many other kinds of thyroid cancer. We can find them in many other kinds of cancers, right? We can find them in meningiomas, right? We can find them in mesotheliomas. We can find them in serous cyst adenocarcinomas of the ovary, right? So those are all high yield things to know for exams. Those things that have sarcoma bodies, again, laminated calcifications, right? And again, remember these often anti nuclei, right? You also find them on histology, right? In a is like nuclear material. You find them in people that have papillary thyroid cancer, right? Papillary thyroid cancer. And again, look at the name papillary, right? But whenever you see the word papillary, it means like the thing is organized like palm fronts, right? So like fingers in a sense, right? That's again something you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams, right? And then follicular thyroid cancer. Again, most times it spreads hematogenously, right? It is probably like the second most common kind of thyroid. It's not probably. It is the second most common kind of thyroid cancer, right? It loves to spread hematogenously, right? So it does not spread through lymph nodes. And when it spreads hematogenously, usually the first point of call is the lungs, right? It loves to spread to the lungs, right? Now, remember, for people taking step one, you want to make sure you can differentiate between a follicular adenoma and a follicular carcinoma, right? The thing is, if you have a follicular lesion and it has not broken through the capsule, it's a follicular adenoma. Once it's broken through the capsule, the thyroid capsule, then that means it's invaded blood vessels. That's going to be a follicular carcinoma, right? Now, it's actually high yield to know for MBM exams, right? The associations with follicular thyroid cancer, right? So what are some of these associations? Well, again, the key things you want to know first is that it spreads hematogenously, right? But second, I want you to keep in mind that this thing has an association with a kind of like one of these genetic diseases you actually want to know about called Cowden syndrome, right? Cowden syndrome, the pathophase there is that you have a mutation in a tumor suppressor gene. It's called P10, P-T-E-N, right? P10, that is a tumor suppressor gene, right? So you have that tumor suppressor gene not working as well as it should. You can have lots and lots of problems, right? It has an association with follicular thyroid cancer. In fact, I'm going to take a small segue or small detour and discuss this Cowden syndrome, right? So what are some key things you want to know about Cowden syndrome for the USMLE exams? The first thing you want to know is that, again, it has autosomal dominant inheritance, right? It has autosomal dominant inheritance. Many times, whenever you see these genetic cancer syndromes, again, this rule does not work for all of them, but it's a nice approximate rule to know that's accurate in about 80 to 90% of cases. These things are usually inherited in an autosomal dominant fashion, right? So again, for people taking step one, remember, it's a mutation in a tumor suppressor gene. It's called the P10 gene, right? P-T-E-N, right? P-T-E-N is like a phosphatase and stuff like that, right? So if that gene does not work, right, your mTOR pathway, because again, our friends at the USMLEs, especially for step one, they love their cell biology, right? So the mTOR pathway would not work. And if it doesn't work, you're going to have trouble with cells undergoing apoptosis, right? You're going to have a ton of cellular proliferation, and that can obviously cause a malignancy. Now, the thing is, there is a ton of stuff to know about Cowden syndrome, but what are the key ones you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams? Well, the key things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams is that these people have a very high risk of breast cancer. In fact, the most common malignancy that develops in people that have Cowden syndrome is breast cancer, right? Again, as I said, they can also have follicular thyroid cancer, right? And sometimes they can even have some of these skin manifestations, right? So they can have like these varicose lesions, kind of looks like HPV lesions. They can have it on the mouth, they can have it on the hands, on the fingers, especially, and usually it's bilateral when it's on the hands or on the fingers, right? They can even have café au lait spots. Many times when they have those varicose HPV like lesions on their skin, those things are called trichylomomas, right? They are called trichylomomas. It's spelled T-R-I-C-H-I-L-E-M-O-M-A-S, right? So T-R-I-C-H-I-L-E-M-O-M-A-S, right? Trichylomomas, right? That's something you want to keep at the back of your mind, right? So again, the thing is, one of the reasons that our friends at the MBMEs would love a topic like this is because it has many findings in other disorders, right? It has many findings in other disorders. I mean, this people can also have polyps, right? Many of these people can also have polyps. And to be honest with you, they can also have hyperpigmented lesions on the skin, I mean, on the mouth, just like people that have Peutz-Jeghers syndrome, right? So that's something I want to keep in mind, right? It literally almost has like findings from Peutz-Jeghers, right? Hyperpigmented lesions of the lips. It has findings from neurofibromatosis. He has those café au lait spots, right? He has these varicose lesions, right? So just kind of keep these things in mind with Cowden syndrome. And the key thing, and one key thing to know with Cowden syndrome is, right, is these people, you know, since these people have a very high risk of breast cancers, many times you're going to start screening them for breast cancers very early in life, right? Many times you're going to start screening them around like the age of 18 or like, you know, 5 years before a cancer started like in a family member, stuff like that, right? Even this follicular thyroid cancer, you need to screen them for thyroid cancer. Again, many times you start at 18 or you start about, you know, 5 to 10 years before the earliest thyroid cancer diagnosis in your families, right? And most times these people, again, because they are so high risk, they have all these colonic polyps, they can develop colon cancer, right? Many times you're going to start screening them at the age of 35, right, for colon cancer, and then screen every 5 years after that, right? And again, many times for these people, they can also have endometrial cancers, right? Again, you see some findings in Lynch syndrome here, colon cancer related, endometrial cancer related. So many times for these people, you're going to start screening them with a renal ultrasound around the age of 40, and then you're going to do it every 1 to 2 years, right? So again, these screening things, not necessary for people taking step one, but for those listening to this podcast that are taking step two, CK, step three, you absolutely need to know this stuff, right? So the reason you're screening, you may wonder, like, Divine, like, what does renal ultrasound have to do with endometrial cancer? Well, let me explain, right? Remember, when people have these reproductive system malignancies, these things can metastasize, right, to the ureters, right? When they metastasize to the ureters, that's going to cause an obstructive uropathy that can cause renal failure. Although that's more under the purview of cervical cancer, but that's something that can absolutely happen in endometrial cancer, right? So that's why you need to know these things for purposes of exams, right? So again, follicular thyroid cancer, again, like I said, spreads hematogenously. And then don't forget, if they give you a question about a person where multiple family members have died of, you know, of a neck mass of thyroid cancer, right? You want to think about medullary thyroid cancer. Remember, it's associated with MEN2A, MEN2B. I remember those problems associated with like a, you know, with a RET gene mutation, right? Remember, in MEN2A, you'll have parathyroid problems, right? Primary hyperparathyroidism, they'll have pheochromocytomas, they'll have medullary thyroid cancer. But in MEN2B, and again, these things are both inherited in autosomal dominant fashions, they're going to have, you know, medullary thyroid cancer, pheochromocytomas, they're going to have a Marfanoid habitus, they're going to be super tall, right? And then they're going to have mucosal neuromas, right? Those are all things you want to keep at the back of your mind for exams, right? And medullary thyroid cancer, the tumor marker is calcitonin, right? So sometimes these people can present with hypocalcemia or antecedents of hypocalcemia, right? Remember, when people have hypocalcemia, they can have like muscle weakness, they can have a prolonged QT interval on an EKG, right? They can have all these arrhythmias, they can have like many different problems, right? So you want to keep that in mind for exams. And this, many times if a person has medullary thyroid cancer and you make the diagnosis, right, and you look at it on histology, remember, those people, if you stain the cancerous tissue with Congo red, right, you're going to see that apple green birefringence, because calcitonin, which is its tumor marker, right, can aggregate and form amyloid, right? Obviously, if you compare the prognosis of medullary thyroid cancer to papillary and follicular, medullary has the worst of those three, right? But if you're looking for the thyroid cancer that has the worst prognosis, you're looking at anaplastic. Now, here's the deal with anaplastic. It's going to be in an old person on exams. Simple as that, right? It's going to be an old person on exams. And I said that papillary spreads through lymph nodes. Follicular spreads through, hematogenously. Anaplastic loves to spread by just direct invasion. It just invades the neck, right? I think most times these people are going to be dead within about 6 months. The prognosis is awful, 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 right? And then one last thing I'm just going to throw in here is that, and usually it's going to be in an elderly female on exams, right? But it can also be in males as well, right? Now, the final thing I think I want to throw in here is, remember, if they give you a question about a person that has Hashimoto's thyroiditis, right? Hashimoto's, right? Again, these people, they have like a lot of lymphoid cells attacking their thyroid gland. those lymphoid cells that are acting all crazy, unfortunately, they can progress all the way to the person having a, you know, like a lymphoma in the thyroid gland. So whenever you see a thyroid lymphoma, right, think about a person that has a past history of Hashimoto's thyroiditis. That's another thyroid malignancy that they can test. You don't find it in many resources, but it's certainly high yield to know those things for exams. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams. Step 1, Step 2 CK, Step 3, preclinical med school exams, third-year clerkship shelf exams. And I also offer these USMLE courses, right? Again, like this month, God willing, I'm offering the 24-hour Step 2 CK, Step 3 course, and also the MBME testing strategies course. Again, those run from the 21st to the 25th of March. And then I offer a DISC school, right? It's a Step 2 CK school. It's a very high-level school. Again, I made a podcast on that. Listen to that. But it's 75 hours long. It's capped at 40 people. And then I have this podcast on all the major podcast apps, right? Apple, Google, Spotify, at least the most recent 150. If you want everything from episode 1 to episode 376, which is this one, I will encourage you to go ahead and, you know, subscribe to, you know, check on the website, divineinterventionpodcasts.com. If you actually have a WordPress account and you subscribe, then whenever I make a new, subscribe to my podcast, and whenever I make a new podcast, you get an email notification. And then I also have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE Podcasts and Videos. That's where I post the videos that I make. And then finally, I also offer a new website. It's called the DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com. DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com is actually also on Apple Podcasts. It's called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons Podcast. I add about 2 every week. And, you know, many people have said they love my life lessons. So I just do a Bible-based, you know, many of you listening to this podcast probably know I'm a Christian. It's like Bible-based teaching, 10 to 15 minute podcasts on just common problems that are faced by humanity. So if you're interested in that, feel free to check out the website. So thank you for listening to me today. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Again, this podcast is really high yield. Listen to it. Commit it to memory, and it will help you crush your exams. Until next time, have a wonderful day. God bless you. Thank you.